Chapter 28. Howarth House. Some would say the Chronogard have a terrific sense of humour. I would say they were just plain annoying. I had heard that they used to bundle up new recruits in gravity suits and pop them a week into the future, just for fun. The game was banned when one recruit vanished outside the cone. Theoretically, he is still there, just outside our time, unable to return and unable to communicate. It is calculated we will catch up with him about 14,000 years from now. Sadly, he will have aged only 12 minutes. Some joke. Thursday next, a life in Speshops. We were both victims of the Chronogard's bizarre sense of humour. It was just past noon the following day. We had been gone only 7 hours. We both reset our watches and drove slowly into Howarth, each sobered by the experience. At Howarth House, a full media circus was in progress. I had hoped to arrive before this sort of thing really gained a toehold, but the hole in the M1 had put paid to that. Lydia Startwright from the Toad News Network had arrived and was recording for the lunchtime bulletin. She stood outside the steps of Howarth House with a microphone and composed herself before beginning. She signalled to her cameraman to roll, adopted one of her most serious expressions, and began. As the sun rose over Howarth House this morning, the police began to investigate a bold theft and double murder. Sometime last night, a security guard was shot dead by an unknown assailant as he attempted to stop him stealing the original manuscript of Jane Eyre. Police have been at the crime scene since early morning and have as yet given no comment. It is fairly certain that parallels must be drawn with the theft of the Martin Chuzzlewit manuscript, which, despite continued police and Speshops efforts, has so far not come to light. Following Mr. Quaverley's extraction and murder, it can only be surmised that a similar fate is in store for Rochester or Jane. The Goliath Corporation, whose presence this morning was an unusual development, have no comment to make, as usual.
And cut. That was very good, darling, declared Lydia's producer. Can we do it once more without the reference to Goliath? You know they'll only cut it out.
Then let them.
Lids, baby. Who pays the bills? I like free speech as much as the next man, but on someone else's airtime, hmm?
She ignored him and looked around as a car arrived. Her face lit up, and she walked briskly across, gesturing for her cameraman to follow. A lean officer of about 40, with silver hair and bags under his eyes, looked to heaven as she approached, cracking his unfriendly face into a smile. He waited patiently for her to make a brief introduction.
"I have with me Detective Inspector Oswald Mandius, Yorkshire CID. Tell me, Inspector, do you think this crime is in any way connected to the Chuzzlewit theft?"
He smiled benignly, fully aware that he would be on 30 million television screens by the evening.
It's far too early to say anything. A full press release will be issued in due course.
Isn't this a case for the Yorkshire Literatech, sir? Jane Eyre is one of this country's most valued treasures.
Mandius stopped to face her.
Unlike other Speshops departments, the Yorkshire Literatechs rely on evidence supplied by the regular police. Literatechs are not police and have no place in a police environment.
Why do you suppose the Goliath Corporation made an appearance this morning?
No more questions,
called out Mandius's deputy as a throng of other news crews started to converge. Goliath had been and gone, but no one was going to learn any more about it. The police pushed their way past and Lydia stopped to have a snack. She had been reporting live since before breakfast. A few minutes later, Bowden and I drove up in the speedster. Well, well, I muttered as I got out of the car. Startwright keeps herself busy.
Morning, Lids. Lydia almost choked on her smiley burger and quickly threw it aside. She picked up her microphone and chased after me.
"Although the Yorkshire Literatex and Goliath are claimed not to be present," muttered Lydia as she tried to keep up, "events have taken an interesting turn with the arrival of Thursday next of SO-27. In a departure from normal procedure, the Literatex have come out from behind their desks and are visiting the crime scene in person."
I stopped to have some fun. Lydia composed herself and started the interview.
"Miss Next, tell me, what are you doing so far out of your jurisdiction?"
"Hi, Lydia. You have mayonnaise on your upper lip from that smiley burger. It has a lot of salt in it, and you really shouldn't eat them. As for the case, I'm afraid it's the same old shit. You will understand that anything we may discover will have to remain a blah-de-blah-de-blah. How's that?"
Lydia hid a smile.
"Do you think the two thefts are linked?"
"My brother Joffy is a big fan of yours, Lids. Can you let me have a signed picture? Joffy, with two Fs. Excuse me."
"Thanks for nothing, Thursday," called out Startright. "I'll be seeing you."
We walked up to the police line and showed our IDs to the constable on duty. He looked at the badges, then at the two of us. We could see he was not impressed. He spoke to Mandius.
"Sir, these two Wessex literatecs want to get at the crime scene."
Mandius ambled over painfully slowly. He looked us both up and down and chose his words with care.
"Here in Yorkshire, literatecs don't leave their desks."
"I've read the arrest reports. It shows," I replied coldly. Mandius sighed. Keeping what he described as eggheads in check, especially those from another special ops region, was obviously not something he was keen to do.
"I have two murders on my hands here, and I don't want the crime scene disturbed. Why don't you wait until you get the report, and then take your investigation from there?"
"The murders are tragic, obviously," I replied. "But Jane Eyre is the thing here. It is imperative that we get to see the crime scene. Jane Eyre is bigger than me and bigger than you. If you refuse, I'll send a report to your superior officer complaining of your conduct." But Mandius was not a man to listen to threats, idle or otherwise. This was Yorkshire, after all. He stared at me and said softly,
"Do your worst, pen pusher."
I took a step forward and he bridled slightly. He wasn't going to give way. A nearby officer moved in behind him to give assistance if needed. I was about to lose my temper when Bowden spoke up.
"Sir," he began, "if we could move slowly toward a goal, we might be able to burrow our way out of the predicament we find ourselves shuffling into."
Mandius's attitude abruptly changed, and he smiled solemnly.
"If that is the case, I'm sure we could manage a quick look for you, as long as you promise not to touch anything."
"On my word," replied Bowden pointedly, patting his stomach. The two of them shook hands and winked, and we were soon escorted into the museum.
"How the hell did you do that?"
I hissed.
"Look at his ring."
I looked. He had a large ring on his middle finger with a curious and distinctive pattern on it.
"What of it?"
"The Most Worshipful Brotherhood of the Wombat." I smiled.
"So, what have you got?"
I asked. "A double murder and a missing script. They just took the manuscript, right? Nothing else."
"Right,"
replied Mandius. "And the guard was shot with his own gun." Mandius stopped and looked sternly at me.
"How did you know that?"
"A lucky guess," I replied evenly. "What about the videotapes?"
"We're studying them at the moment."
"There's no one on them, is there?" Mandius looked at me curiously.
"Do you know who did this?"
I followed him into the room that once held the manuscript. The untouched glass case was sitting forlornly in the middle of the floor. I ran my fingertips across a mottled and uneven patch on the glass. "Thanks, Mandius. You're a star," I said, walking back out. Bowden and Mandius looked at one another and hastened after me.
"That's it," said Mandius. "That's your investigation."
"I've seen all I need to see."
"Can you give me anything?"
asked Mandius, trotting to keep up. He looked at Bowden.
"Brother, you can tell me."
"We should tell the DI what we know Thursday. We owe him for allowing us in." I stopped so suddenly, Mandius almost bumped into me. "Ever hear of a man named Hades?" Mandius went visibly pale and looked around nervously. "Don't worry, he's long gone."
"They say he died in Venezuela."
"They say he can walk through walls," I countered. "They also say he gives off colours when he moves. Hades is alive and well, and I have to find him before he starts to make use of the manuscript." Mandius seemed to have undergone a humbling change as soon as he realized who was behind it all.
"Anything I can do?"
I paused for a moment. "Pray you never meet him." The drive back to Swindon was uneventful. The area on the M1 where all the trouble had been, now back to normal. Victor was waiting for us in the office. He seemed slightly agitated.
"I've had Braxton on the phone all morning, bleating on about insurance cover being inoperative if his officers act outside their jurisdiction."
"Same old shit."
"That's what I told him. I've got most of the office reading Jane Eyre at the moment, in case anything unusual happens. All quiet so far."
"It's only a matter of time."
"Hmm."
"Muller mentioned Hades being at Penderyn somewhere," I said to Victor. "Anything come of that?"
"Nothing that I know of. Shit said he had looked into it and drawn a blank. There are over 300 possible Penderyns that Muller might have meant. More worrying, have you seen this morning's paper?"
I hadn't. He showed me the inside front page of The Mole. It read, "Troop movements near Welsh border." I read on with some alarm. Apparently, there had been troop movements near Hereford, Chepstow, and the disputed border town of Oswestry. A military spokesman had dismissed the manoeuvres as simple exercises, but it didn't sound good at all. Not at all. I turned to Victor. "Jack shit? Do you think he wants the prose portal badly enough to go to war with Wales?"
"Who knows what power the Goliath Corporation wields? He might not be behind this at all. It could be coincidence or just sabre-rattling. But in any event, I don't think we can ignore it."
"Then we need to steal a march. Any ideas?" "What did Muller say again?" asked Finisterre. I sat down. He screamed, "He's at Penderyn. Nothing else." "Nothing else?" asked Bowden. "No. When Chit asked him which Penderyn he meant, as there must be hundreds, Muller told him to guess." Bowden spoke up. "What were his precise words?"
"He said, 'Guess,' then repeated it, but it turned into a yell. He was in grave pain at the time. The conversation was recorded, but there is about as much chance as getting hold of that as..."
"Maybe he meant something else."
"Like what, Bowden?"
"I really only speak tourist Welsh, but gwesty means hotel."
"Oh, my God," said Victor.
"Victor?" I queried. But he was busy rummaging in a large pile of maps he had accumulated. Each of them had Penderyn of some sort marked on it. He spread a large street plan of Merthyr Tydfil out on the table and pointed at a place just between the Palace of Justice and Government House. We craned to see where his finger was pointing, but the location was unmarked.
"The Penderyn Hotel," announced Victor grimly. "I spent my honeymoon there. Once the equal of the Adelphi or Raffles. It's been empty since the 60s. If I wanted a safe haven..."
"He's there," I announced.
looking at the map of the Welsh capital city uneasily. That's where we'll find him.
And how do you suppose we'll manage to enter Wales undetected, make our way into a heavily guarded area, snatch Mycroft and the manuscript, and get out in one piece?
Asked Bowden.
It takes a month to even get a visa.
We'll find a way in, I said slowly.
You're crazy, said Victor. Braxton would never allow it.
That's where you come in.
Me? Braxton doesn't listen to me.
I think he's about to start.